Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. A White House official says President Trump plans to approve the release of a classified memo alleging U.S. law enforcement officials were biased against the president. Mr. Trump is at odds with both the FBI and the Justice Department over whether to make the memo public. Democrats and other critics of the memo say it selectively uses classified intelligence to allege the Russia investigation into Moscow's influence and the 2016 U.S. presidential election is affected by political bias. Criminal defense attorney Jack Rice spoke with VOA about whether the U.S.-Russia investigation has been politicized.
The purpose of this investigation is to determine whether or not, not just that the Russians actually tried to manipulate this election, they did. That is a question that has already been answered. The question is whether or not anybody in the Trump campaign was involved in colluding with the Russians. The issue isn't about trying to defend the president or trying to bury the president. The issue is to determine what exactly the Russians did and how close to the president they actually got.
The memo has become a flashpoint in a politically divided Washington. Pakistan's defense minister is expressing concern about a White House statement saying the U.S. military has been given authority to eliminate militant safe havens in Pakistan. U.S. Marine Corps Lieutenant General Kenneth McKenzie says the U.S. military does not contemplate military operations inside of Pakistan. United States expressing concern about Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga's self-inauguration January 30th. Odinga took the oath of president as a mock inauguration, a symbolic move in defiance of last year's controversial election. This is VOA News. A U.S. federal judge has again blocked the Trump administration from deporting 50 illegal Indonesian Christian immigrants who say they could face violence if sent back to the Muslim-majority Indonesia. Some of the Indonesians have been in the U.S. for more than 20 years, and immigration authorities have always allowed them to stay as long as they reported regularly to immigration and customs enforcement agents. But the official told them in August that they would have to leave. It is unclear why. A court in Myanmar has declined to grant bail for two Reuters journalists accused of violating the country's Official Secrets Act. Reuters' Julian Satterthwaite has details.
Walloon and Chorsou were detained in mid-December after being invited to meet police officers over dinner in Yangon. Both told relatives they were arrested almost immediately after being handed documents at a restaurant by two officers they had not met before. However, at the last hearing, the first witness, a police lieutenant, said he was told the two were arrested while walking along a road carrying official documents. He said those included details about a police battalion in Rakhine. Defense lawyers had told the court that the documents contained information already made public in newspaper reports. The next hearing will be on February 6th.
That is Reuters' Julian Satterthwaite reporting. Speaking in Mexico City, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson warned that China is assuming alarming roles in Latin America.
Today, China is gaining a foothold in Latin America. It is using economic statecraft to pull the region into its orbit. The question is, at what price?
Tillerson also said Russia is increasing its involvement in the region. He urged regional powers to work with the United States instead. Violent clashes between Taliban insurgents and the Islamic State militants have forcibly displaced thousands of civilians in Afghanistan's north. Members of a provincial council warned if government does not launch an operation to suppress the militants in the provinces, more civilians will suffer and potentially die at the hands of Taliban and IS militants. Meantime, local government officials downplay the IS and Taliban threat and reject reports the large number of civilians have been displaced in the province due to continued fighting. The snowpack that is essential for the U.S. state of California's water supply is critically low again this year, raising fears of return to drought. Researchers from the state's Department of Water Resources headed into the Sierra Nevada Mountains to measure water content and snow levels near Lake Tahoe. They found the snowpack stood at less than a third of its normal size for the date. Get more news at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN Refugee Agency criticizes Nigeria over the forced removal of Cameroonian refugees back to Cameroon.
UNHCR is alarmed at the forced returns of Cameroonian nationals who claimed asylum in Nigeria. And this goes against the cornerstone of asylum rights, which is the non-refoulement, the non-forced returns for people who claim asylum and refugees.
Romy Desclos is UNHCR spokesman for West Africa. South Africa's main opposition calls for President Jacob Zuma's immediate removal before the February 8th State of the Nation speech. And Zimbabwe's controversial former vice president visits ouster leader Robert Mugabe and criticizes the current government.
The same people who are now in control are the very same people who went and kicked Mugabe. So they knew what they wanted to do. They wanted me out of the way first so that they'll be able to get to Mugabe easily.
That's former Zimbabwe Vice President Joyce Mujuru. Zambia's main opposition leader preaches national unity, but without recognizing the legitimacy of President Lungu. And a new venture fund soon to invest around $100 million in startup companies around Africa. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN Refugee Agency has criticized the Nigerian government over the forced removal of Cameroonian refugees and sending them back to Cameroon, where the agency feels they could be persecuted again. Last month, Nigerian security forces abducted about 40 members of a Cameroonian separatist group as they were holding a meeting in Abuja to discuss the welfare of Cameroonian refugees in Nigeria. This week, Nigeria turned the group over to Cameroon authorities, who immediately took them into custody. Romain Desclos, the UNHCR spokesman for West Africa, says the forced removal is a violation of the principle of non-refoulement, which is the cornerstone of international refugee law. It states that no one seeking asylum can be forced to go back to a country where they could be persecuted.
UNHCR is alarmed at the forced returns of Cameroonian nationals who claimed asylum in Nigeria. And this goes against the cornerstone of asylum rights, which is the non-refoulement, the non-forced return for people who claim asylum and refugees.
But as you know, the Cameroonian government referred to these people as terrorists. How different is it from ordinary refugees?
Well, those people, as well as over 12,000 Cameroonians, have fled Cameroon and are claiming that they are being persecuted and have claimed asylum in Nigeria. So this is the right of asylum, is one that you claim protection from persecution and conflict. This is the cornerstone of asylum rights and refugees' rights, and this is what we're here to protect. And we have been in close contact with the governments of Nigeria, and they have been very supportive up until then. We've had a few instances already where some people had been arrested, and after we had cleared the authorities, they had been released and had the possibility to lodge their asylum claims. And this is what we're advocating for, that people who have genuine fears for persecution can claim asylum.
As you mentioned, you've been in touch with the Nigerian authorities. I must admit the government of Nigeria has been kind of mute when it comes to whether they arrested these Cameroonian people or not. So what did the government tell you?
We've been in touch with the government, with the authorities, to have access to some of the people we work on. Is we try to reach out and make sure that the people claiming asylum have due process for their asylum claim to be treated. And that by this line that we are advocating today for the right of asylum to be protected and for non-refoulement to be enforced.
If you say that the government of Nigeria might have violated this international law, are there any consequences?
We're still working with the Nigerian government. We're still working with the Cameroonian government, because at the moment we have a situation where we have 12,000 Cameroon nationals claiming asylum and have been registered by UNHCR and the Nigerian authority and Cross River and close by, of people who've been fleeing persecution and violences. And the Nigerian government has granted quite a lot of them asylum rights and refugee rights. So the Nigerian authority is very well aware of the situation, and we're working together to find a solution. And the Nigerian authority have been tremendously generous in hosting and welcoming Cameroon nationals, and that's what we're working for, to continue this very strong cooperation with the whereby we can provide protection and assistance to people who need it most.
When you say you are working with the Nigerian authorities, I mean, is it about future refugee protection? Because these people have already been taken to Cameroon, and the last we know, they have been detained in Cameroon.
Indeed, we have a situation at the moment where we have 12,000 registered refugees, and all of them have been provided and recognized as such. There's a few more coming by, and that's, again, Nigerian authorities are providing a tremendous help, and UNHCR is very grateful for this help that is being provided in terms of not only registering them, but providing relief items, non-food items, call relief, urgent assistance, life-saving activities, etc. And that is where we're working with. And we, of course, been working very closely with them to ensure that there will be no further forced return.
Romain Desclos is the UNHCR spokesman for West Africa. He was speaking with me from Senegal's capital, Dakar. South Africa's main opposition Democratic Alliance has called for President Jacob Zuma's immediate removal before the February 8th State of the Nation speech. The party says it would be inappropriate for Mr. Zuma to address the nation amid corruption allegations against him. Zuma faces 783 counts of corruption relating to a $2 billion arms deal in the late 1990s. His supporters say the corruption charges are politically motivated and racially tinted. Jordan Lewis, a parliamentarian from the Opposition Democratic Alliance, tells VOA's Peter Clotty that President Zuma does not have any credibility to be allowed to address the nation from parliament.
Well, that's the call we've made. We don't think it's appropriate for him to deliver the State of the Nation address. He has the credibility in the public mind. He faces criminal charges for corruption. He has faced 8 motions of no confidence, the last of which he narrowly survived. He holds absolutely no power or credibility in his own party. We know for a fact that it's just a matter of time before he is recalled and fired by his party. It may happen within weeks, it may happen within months, and it would just be a waste of time to listen to him deliver a State of the Nation address when we know that it's a meaningless speech. It will be replaced and repealed, and a new president and a new State of the Nation will be coming soon.
So what would be the stance of the Democratic Alliance in Parliament if he goes ahead to deliver the speech? Because the Speaker of Parliament is saying that from the way things are at the moment, it is on course that President Zuma will deliver the State of the Nation address next week.
Sure, well, we will make our objections known and make sure that the public understands what little credibility this president has.
Well, in another development, President Zuma has provided argument on why he should not be prosecuted for the alleged corruption that he is accused of. He presented it to the state prosecutor. What are your thoughts?
We obviously haven't seen those representations, but whatever they are, they cannot obfuscate or obviate the strength of the evidence against President Zuma. The prosecution team, in the words of the chief prosecutor, said that this was one of the strongest corruption cases that he has ever seen and ever prosecuted. There is an overwhelming amount of evidence against the president, and he will no doubt come up with some reason to try and delay those charges or prevent them from going ahead. But no excuse will be good enough. He must face those charges in court.
Does the Democratic Alliance back the ruling of the court that called for the reinstatement of the charges against him?
Yes, absolutely. That is our court case. We applied for that and we absolutely wholeheartedly support that. That's why he must face the charges.
How confident are you that the National Prosecuting Authority will go ahead and press forward with the prosecution in spite of the evidence he said he has presented to the prosecutor?
Well, we are confident because we will not give up until they do. We will make sure that the rule of law and the quality of the law is upheld and that they don't do those charges.
So far in your constituency, how are people reacting to the call by the Democratic Alliance for the president to be removed from office by his political party and let somebody else, perhaps Cyril Ramaphosa, deliver the State of the Nation address?
Well, very well. I think most people agree that the sooner that Jacob Zuma goes, the better for South Africa. And frankly, we want him gone now.
Jordan Lewis is a parliamentarian from South Africa's main opposition Democratic Alliance Party. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Pretoria. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, the 2nd day of February. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe's former deputy president, Joyce Mujuru, says she has met with her former boss, ousted president Robert Mugabe, and said Mugabe is looking rested and happy. Mujuru, who was attacked by a suspected ZANU-PF youth on Thursday while touring parts of Harare, said she feels vindicated after meeting Mr. Mugabe, who, she said, apologized for ousting her. Mujuru said current President Emmerson Mnangagwa and his government are not the people's government as they claim to be. In this interview with reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service, Mujuru says Mnangagwa and his government came to office by way of force.
Everybody must know that this government is not a people's government. It came by force. And if they see people who are doing things in peace, they are not happy. And what shocked them was to see how happy people in Highfield, Glen Norah, Glenview were, because we visited the market, we visited the shopping centers, and we were busy discussing with people, trying to understand the situation and conditions in which these people are. In fact, if you were to see the conditions with which these people at Glenview Furniture Complex are working under, you really shed tears. I was, you know, walking across the premises in dirty, you know, waters, and I don't know why they are still not sick. Because to tell you the truth, you can't say that situation is a situation that should be witnessed in Zimbabwe during this day and age, when we are a country that has loads of diamonds, lots of gold, lots of platinum, and we can't even use those resources to improve the living conditions of our people. It's unheard of, it's uncalled for.
And we understand that you were injured. What object was used to attack you?
Unfortunately, I didn't see it. Maybe they hit me with a fist or a stone, I don't know. But when I went to see the doctor, my right cheek was too swollen. Right now it's subsiding because I was given medication to get it to subside.
And how many of your supporters were injured?
Unfortunately, I didn't get the statistics, but some of them have gone to CSU and some, you know, got, you know, to be treated elsewhere. But soon we'll be able to get the statistics and share with you.
We also understand from our sources that there were also soldiers who were part of the attackers. Is this true?
Yes, I have been phoned through gifts, people telling us that five of the arrested people who are at Glen Norah Police Station were soldiers. Two of them were soldiers out of five people.
And we also understand that you met with President Robert Mugabe. Just tell us briefly about that meeting.
I'm sure if he had to call you to really pay him a visit, you'd have done the same like what I did. He called me and I obliged. Yes, he was telling me that what happened was wrong. He was misinformed. They were tricked. And mind you, the same people who are now in control are the very same people who went and tricked Mugabe. So they knew what they wanted to do. They wanted me out of the way first, so that they'll be able to get to Mugabe easily. You know, for a start, I told him that they were not, it wasn't me. It's people who are after Mugabe who are, you know, doing all these things. And it has been vindicated by what I said to him.
So did he ask for an apology, or you could just tell that he was apologizing to you for the way he had treated you?
I understand, you know, for him to pick up a phone and call me, isn't that a big thing that should tell? That, you know, an old man is sorry about everything. But, you know, I understood. And my view of my age, I should be able to understand that, you know, that's how things go.
And do you forgive him for the way he treated you?
Why do I have to keep a grudge, my dear? It's only God who does it, not me. And that's why I kept quiet when the whole, you know, thing was still hot. I knew I had not done anything wrong. That's why I kept quiet. So I forgave him a long time ago, including the wife.
So what did he say about the coup? Did he actually resign, or he was forced to resign?
I didn't get that far, my dear.
Joyce Mujuru is the former Zimbabwe vice president and currently the opposition National People's Party leader. She was speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service. The leader of Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development, has called for unity in the country to foster peace and economic development. Hakainde Hichilema spoke Thursday at the funeral of a member of his party. Hichilema has yet to recognize President Edgar Lungu as the legitimate president because he says Lungu's election was fixed. Charles Kokoma, a spokesman for Zambia's UPND party. He says Mr. Hichilema was speaking in the context of the overall problems confronting the country and how the citizens together can overcome those challenges.
Well, in the last 1 week, he has been holding press conferences to address the issues of corruption, issues of this cholera epidemic that has broken out in Zambia. And he has been saying that as Zambians, they needed to unite to fight these vices. And he's calling on fellow opposition members to join forces for the purpose of fighting corruption, for the purpose of fighting the cholera epidemic, and for the purpose of fighting political violence. It is in that sense that he thinks the Zambians must unite to overcome these difficulties.
But as you know, since the elections, Mr. Chilema has been at odds with the president, Edgar Lungu. Now, how do you bring about unity in purpose to foster peace and economic development if he has not recognized the current president?
Akainde Chilema has not recognized the current president of the country. His presidential election petition is still in the High Court and is pursuing it. What he's doing, for example, in the health sector is that he has set up a cholera committee within his political party to help in fighting this disease. And he has since donated an assortment of items towards that purpose, chlorine and other things to help to fight the disease. And he's saying he can work with government, for example, those things were donated to government ministers to help in the fight against cholera. In that way, we can work together with the ruling party for a common purpose. But that does not mean that we are recognizing Lungu. It is just to help the citizens overcome this difficulty.
But President Lungu is the president, and when you help the citizens, then you are indirectly helping the government. So what then does come up and say, we are ready to work with you, Mr. President?
No. In fact, the type of help and type of donation is not going to Lungu. It is going to the poor, stricken Zambians who can't afford even a bottle of chlorine, which is less than a dollar. And Kainde Hichilema has donated those things in order to help those poor people, not helping Lungu as a person.
You mentioned the case is still in court. Is the UPND still pursuing this election case?
Until it is heard, our position is that election petition was never heard. It was just stopped on technicalities by the Constitutional Court. But technicalities are not justice. They do not form part of justice. Justice must prevail.
Charles Kakoma is a spokesman for Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development, who is speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. A new venture fund, Partech Africa, will be investing around $100 million in startup companies around the continent. But the Dakar-based firm will be specifically looking to grow Francophone African enterprises. One of the general partners, Tijan Demi, tells Ricky Stryak about how they plan to invest from $600,000 to $6 million in various businesses and drive demand for innovation.
Our team, Cyril and I, are from Senegal and Cameroon, so we have a strong Francophone bias. Of course, we expect that we will do more in Francophone Africa than any other investor so far, but our mandate is definitely across Africa.
West and Central Africa, especially Francophone, are kind of more lacking than other regions on the continent. So, I mean, do you think it's also not just because of your expertise, but there is a great need in these West and Central Francophone African countries?
Yes, so the need is very large indeed. And I think actually it's even, the bias is even more stark than people would think. If you look at 2016, tech investment across Africa was around $370 million. These are some figures we released last year. It's been growing from 2012, it was $40 million, to 2016, it was already almost 10 times that amount. And it's we are releasing soon the data for 2017, and it's been growing faster than expected. But if you look at this amount, 82% of it went to three markets, and only three markets. And those are Nigeria, Kenya, and South Africa. So it means all the rest of the continent is seeing very little investment. And of course, innovation is happening across the region. So people have been ignoring some interesting innovations. And we hope that with a local investor, with teams on the ground who've been operating in West Africa as well as in East Africa, in Francophone as well as in Anglophone space, we'll be able to throw much wider nets and go find those startups all over the place.
That was Tijan Demi, a partner at Partech Africa, who was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Dakar. Time for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the 2018 CHAN competition holding in Morocco, where Nigeria will look to upset host Morocco in the 2018 African Nations Championship final, set for the start Mohamed V in Casablanca on Sunday evening. The Atlas Lions and the Super Eagles are bidding to become the fourth different winners of the CHAN, joining the honors board of DR Congo, who were champions in 2009 and 2016, Tunisia in 2014, and Libya in 2015. Both sides came through the semifinals on Wednesday evening, where Morocco needed extra time to overcome a resilient Libya 3-1 in their North African derby in Casablanca, while Nigeria edged Sudan 1-0 in a hard-fought clash in Marrakesh. Kenyan Premier League 2018 season is set for kick-off this weekend with two matches planned for live television broadcast. A doubleheader at Nakuru's Afra Stadium pitting Ulinzi Stars against Zoo FC and Postal Rangers versus AFC Leopards will be beamed live on yet-to-be-announced broadcaster on Saturday. Elsewhere in East Africa, Ugandan football fans will have an opportunity to see the FIFA World Cup trophy as it will be displayed for 2 days at the Lugungo Stadium. The trophy, which will be received by Ugandan government officials or the president on March the 5th, will be available for the rest of Ugandans to view inside Lugungo Cricket Oval in Kampala. And staying with football news, a host of African players were involved in various transfers on deadline day. Senegalese striker Demba Ba makes his Turkish league return after joining Göztepe from Chinese Super League side Shanghai Shenhua. Demba Ba scored 29 goals in 37 appearances for the Chinese club. Ghana international Andre Ayew joined English Premier League side Swansea City from West Ham United for a club record fee. La Liga side UD Las Palmas announced the double signing of Nigerian internationals Ogenekaro Etebo and Emmanuel Emineke on deadline day. Algerian international striker Islam Slimani completed a loan move to Newcastle United from Leicester City until the end of the season. While Senegal forward Homa Babacar switched Serie A sides after joining U.S. Sassuolo from ACF Fiorentina in a swap deal for Diego Valencini. In other sports news, a masterful century by Indian captain Virat Kohli helped India easily overcome the Proteas of South Africa by 6 wickets in the first ODI played at the Kingsmead Stadium in Durban. In the process, the visitors ended South Africa's record run of 17 consecutive home wins in 50-over wickets, a feat achieved by no other nation. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, second edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.